The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hanky Digital presents The Skin. Show me what lies beneath. An audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 2. Above. As Detective Helen Louisiani stepped through the tall, Rococo-style wrought iron gate into the driveway of the River House, she was nearly run over by a speeding police car. She wasn't a very tall woman, but this hadn't happened to her in a long time. She jumped out of the way just in time. The driver honked and gesticulated angrily, but when he noticed the police badge pinned to the lapel of her black coat, he slowed to a walking pace, eventually parking at the edge of the courtyard next to the other cars. From a distance, Helen recognized the unmarked limousine of her colleague, Davis, and at the same time heard the rattle of a helicopter. She looked up. The TV station logo was too far away to see. "So the vultures are already circling," she thought. "I have to hurry." Once inside the spacious lobby, she had to show her badge three times. "Yes, I am a small woman," she fumed inwardly. "Yes, my voice sounds like I'm not old enough to order a beer. Yes, I made it to homicide. Thank you." Finally, she reached the elevators. "What floor?" she asked one of her uniformed colleagues. Her high-pitched voice echoed in the lobby, sounding even more unnatural. But the young man either didn't hear her or simply ignored her. Then Helen realized why. He was green in the face. He was holding a crumpled handkerchief. She wasn't expecting a pretty sight. 14th, he said, a little shy when he caught her gaze. But her mind was elsewhere. 14th. Of course, she thought, and stopped in front of the open elevator door. For someone like her, who couldn't stand elevators, this was clearly the wrong city. "Are you all right?" the policeman asked when he noticed her hesitation. Helen grinned and licked her lips. "Everything's fine," she replied. Then she turned and walked to the door, marked staircase. Despite her sore calves and labored breathing, Helen felt fine when she reached the penthouse. She was agile and tough. Helen had even run the city marathon twice in a respectable time. "Wow," she exclaimed. She certainly wouldn't be claustrophobic here. Helen couldn't remember ever seeing an apartment this big in Manhattan. As she walked through the rooms, she passed one wonder after another. A dressing room the size of her own apartment in Jersey, filled with women's shoes. Hundreds of women's shoes. Lined up like cars in a parking garage. Well, if her partner Davis's brief phone call was correct, the owner probably wasn't going anywhere. Clothes and accessories took up five other rooms in the city palace. "This is more like a warehouse than a penthouse," Helen thought. She reached the pool. Reflections of water danced on the ceiling. Guests had the luxury of a hot tub and the convenience of a steam sauna, the whole nine yards. "Not bad," she whistled through her teeth. Davis, who had been standing by the blood-stained glass door leading to the terrace talking to a guard, only now noticed Helen. He walked over to her. "Glad you could get here so quickly," he said mockingly. He was already wearing rubber gloves. She clenched hers. "I tried, okay?" He nodded sympathetically. "You should get over it." She knew what he meant. Her claustrophobia. "I'm here, aren't I?" she replied irritably. She wasn't in the mood to argue with him right now. She had claustrophobia and vertigo. So what? So is she? She asked. Davis realized she was changing the subject and nodded. Mia Wong and her lover, Victor Adams. Shit! Helen swore loudly. That explained all the fuss. She could tell by the narrow look on Davis's face that he had guessed what she was thinking. He looked even more tense and tired than usual. Did somebody tell Chief P? She asked. That was what they called her boss, Chief Phillips. Yes, I've already spoken to her. As soon as we're done here, I'll give her the details for the press conference. I was thinking 11 o'clock. Sounds good. The city's press policy had changed, especially with such a high-profile victim. And especially about this case. If they hadn't given the pertinent information to the media themselves, the intrusion on the journalists would have been unbearable. They willingly fed the boa before it put them in a headlock. It only worked when the investigators delivered results fast enough. But in this case, it wouldn't be a problem. Is this her apartment? She asked. No, it belongs to Victor Adams. He's some bigwig at a media company, Davis explained. Was. Helen corrected him. And do we have a knife again? Yes, a kitchen knife. Staff? Had the day off. Apparently they wanted to make themselves at home. And where is it? In the bedroom, on the bed. And you're sure he's our guy? No doubt. The method and the arrangement of the body are the same. But why? She asked. We may never know. Let's be glad it's over. Glad isn't quite the right expression, don't you think? Davis shrugged. You want to see him? He's in there. Helen thought, then shook her head. No, I want to see her first. Mia Wong's torso leaned against the railing, her thin, endless leg stretched out. Helen's gaze shifted to the disfigured body and she had to swallow. This spot offered a breathtaking view of the East River and the Queensboro Bridge. Tall and tall. Damn it. She had to pull herself together. She had already lost one battle in her fight against the phobia today. And that was enough. She forced herself to focus on the dead, mutilated supermodel. Helen had seen many deaths in her long career, including horribly mutilated victims. But now she understood why the young officer had thrown up in the lobby. It was a rare sight. All right, she thought. The obvious first. Like Inez Diega, Victor Adams had used a knife to rip the skin off his girlfriend Mia Wong's body. It lay torn around the body like wet wrapping paper. Signs of a violent struggle indicated that Mia had been conscious during the procedure. At some point, she had lost the strength to resist, and the killer had been able to finish his gruesome work in peace. Only then had he slit her stomach. Helen stumbled. The wound on her stomach is different from the one he made on Inez Diega. Davis bent over the body. You are right. I didn't notice that before. It's all covered in blood. Helen took a step toward the body and felt dizzy. Damn it! She hissed and grabbed Davis's wrist. Would you rather go inside? He looked at her worriedly. No. I'm fine. Now the railing was between her and the yawning chasm. She sighed. This wasn't her day. She examined the shockingly mutilated body. She is so thin. She thought. Even in photographs and on television, the models looked thin, but like this in reality, the woman's body looked emaciated and as light as paper, just skin and bones. And her clean-cut boyfriend, Victor, made sure that when she died, only the bones would be left. Well, at least the bastard can't do any more damage, Davis remarked soberly. That's true, Helen muttered, still looking at Mia Wong's body. But he still has those arms. She felt Davis's hand on her shoulder. Don't blame yourself, Helen. We've only been working on Inez Diega's murder for a week. We hadn't even considered Victor Adams a suspect. And yet he did it. 100%. He grinned. She had known Davis for 4 years and knew exactly how to interpret that. We caught him in the act? She asked incredulously, raising her eyebrows. He nodded. Davis led her into the bedroom. He took a remote control from the nightstand and showed it to Helen like a magician showing a prop before a magic trick. Well? Helen asked impatiently. Watch this. He pressed a button. A gasp escaped her lips as the picture frames on the walls suddenly came to life, leaving her in awe of their clever disguise as flat screens. They all showed the same thing, a video that obviously captured different camera positions in this room. The video showed Victor Adams lying in bed. Mia Wong emerged from the adjoining bathroom. She was wearing an almost transparent negligee. She lay down on the bed with Victor and kissed him. He hugged her. His hand slipped under the thin material. Helen turned and looked around the room. She saw no cameras at first, but using the rapidly changing angles of the video as clues, she recognized half a dozen small holes in the ceiling and walls. Davis grinned. Cool, huh? They used to use mirrors. This is all the rage now. 6 cameras, 6 angles, switching one at a time. Picture changes every 5 seconds. You won't even find a clip like that on cable TV. Who needs it? Helen shook her head. I find it odd, to say the least. But it's very useful to us. Davis pointed to one of the umbrellas. Here it comes. Helen looked again. Victor Adams kissed Mia Wong, whispered something in her ear, then got up and left the bedroom. Mia Wong collapsed on the bed. Helen swallowed. They were now watching the last minutes of this woman's life. Like many crime victims, Mia had no idea what was about to happen to her. Run away, Helen screamed in her mind. But the opportunity had already passed. Someone had already skinned and killed Mia Wong. Victor Adams had returned to the bedroom and into the frame. He was holding a large knife. Mia Wong had a questioning look on her face. What are you doing? Helen read her lips. Hey, what? Then Victor Adams stabbed her. Mia turned to the side and the knife grazed her shoulder. She screamed. Blood spurted from the gaping wound. Mia jumped out of bed and ran out of sight of the cameras. Victor got up and followed his girlfriend. He was completely calm and seemed emotionless. Davis fast-forwarded the footage. The camera records no change for half an hour, he explained. That wasn't entirely true. There was a small change as the blood on the sheet dried quickly. The darkness grew, approaching pitch black. Then Victor Adams came back into view. He was covered in blood from head to toe. He sat on the edge of the bed and began cutting himself with the knife. He would switch hands, cutting with his right and then his left. Then he would lie down and open his wrists with 2 quick vertical cuts. He spread his arms. The blood seeping from his veins drew an arc across the sheets. Victor Adams closed his eyes. A few minutes later, the rising and falling of his chest slowed and then stopped. He was dead. That's it, Davis murmured. I don't know about you, Dave, Helen said after a while, but I need a break now. By the time they reached the 36th floor, Davis was lighting his 2nd cigarette. He held the door open for Helen as they stood at the entrance to the roof. She looked out. From here, the Queensborough Bridge resembled the pale spine of a skeleton. Helen shook her head. I'll stop here if you don't mind. He didn't mind. He handed her the cigarette without a word. They stood there for a while, smoking in silence. What do you think? He finally asked. Helen stared into the distance. I don't know. None of it makes sense. But we have the perpetrator on tape. Let's wait for the DNA analysis. That will only confirm it. You know that. It was him, Helen. But why? What reason would a man like Adams have to do such a thing? We've had similar surprises before. Yes, but this one is different. It's too smooth. It's too perfect. He didn't even blink when he hurt her. A person doesn't just tick off and then behave so precisely and without scruples. Okay, Helen, let's set aside the obvious facts. Tell me what your instincts tell you about what happened down there. Helen shook her head. I don't know, Davis. I just don't know. Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital audiobook podcasts and its author, Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.